From the Altoa Marine Corps Air Station, this is Marine Staff Sergeant Bob Vandy Walker interviewing Sergeant Dan Gage, who returned from Vietnam on November 1st of 1965. Sergeant Gage spent approximately 5 months in Vietnam. Dan, what outfit were you with over there? When did you leave the States? And what other outfits have you been stationed with?
We left the States at November 1st, 1964. I was in VMFA 513. I stayed with that outfit for the entire tour of duty in Vietnam.
Who was the commanding officer of your outfit?
Lieutenant Colonel Walter C. Stewart.
What type of aircraft were they flying in your outfit? What was your job in the unit?
I'm an aircraft fire control technician. The type of aircraft was F-4B Phantoms.
What did your average day consist of in Vietnam from morning to night?
Well, I was on the crew that worked from 12 midnight till 12 noon. We would go in at 12 midnight to relieve the day crew, as we called them. Actually, they were from noon to midnight. And actually, our main purpose was to keep the aircraft up, the radar up, so that they would be operational for both bombing and missile shooting.
Now, what was the mission of your squadron?
The mission of my squadron is to search and destroy all designated targets that are handed down from us from the what we call the RAG orders that come in from the Air Force in command in Vietnam. They have the highest commander over there. He's in command of everything air, operational air. And he hands down the RAG order, and he will give us so many missions a day to fulfill, plus whatever emergency missions that come up.
Did this include day and night missions both?
Day and night.
Now, you were stationed at what base, sir?
Da Nang.
Can you give me a sort of a breakdown of what Da Nang, what it consisted of as far as living conditions and so forth, what you had?
As far as the Marine Corps went, the living conditions were for the air wing were mainly tents. Some Marines lived in old Vietnamese barracks, but these were division Marines, the ones that were attached to Division 3rd Marine Division headquarters. Now, this is not actually 3rd Marine Division headquarters as we knew it, but it all came over under the Provisional Brigade commanded by Major General Walt. He was our commanding general of every Marine in Vietnam. Now, the living conditions as we knew them weren't the best, but I guess they could have gotten worse because we heard of the Marines out and actually doing the fighting, defending the base, that they lived in just from hand to mouth, so to speak.
What type of perimeter did you have set up as far as defense against people who might want to come into the base, like the Vietnamese?
Well, we had both Vietnamese and Marine Corps personnel out guarding the perimeter. The Marines were basically out there to protect us. The Vietnamese were out there to question infiltrators and to make sure that if anybody did get in, they either were the correct people or if they were incorrect, such as they tried several times to infiltrate with spies and informers that they wanted to know if they ever got on base so they could be apprehended.
At any time when you were in Da Nang, was a base attacked?
Several times. Usually they would send in suicide squad, what we call probers. They would probe at a certain area to try to find a weakness to come in to destroy aircraft. That was the big thing they wanted, that and fuel dumps. They blew up the fuel dump several times, and they, on July 1st and July 2nd of 1965, they did hit our area pretty heavily and destroyed three aircraft.
Now, can you tell me what happened? This happened at night?
Yes, it did.
Can you tell me what you know about this?
Well, I was off duty that night, and I was asleep when it happened. I woke up to firing, to what sounded like mortars, light mortars, and a tremendous sheet of flame rising up in the air about 100 feet. It looked as though the whole world was on fire. And what had happened, some Viet Cong had cut their way through the concertina wire and the fences we had up, and they had slipped past the patrols out on the road and gotten in there and blew the planes up, not with mortars as we first expected, but with hand grenades. And they couldn't tell for sure, but they suspected some satchel charges.
They got this close to the aircraft?
Yes, they did.
Has anybody ever figured out how many there was?
They figured approximately 20.
Did we capture any of these or kill any of these people?
We did. One man in our outfit, a Corporal Davis, was standing guard duty. He was Corporal of the Guard that night on a M60 machine gun, and he was credited with killing 4.
Did you have a chance to talk to Corporal Davis at all afterwards?
I did.
Well, what did he have to say to you in regards to this?
He said that the reason he was effective, he had never been in combat before, and the reason he was so effective with this machine gun was because of his spotters that were working with him with the gun. And he had a guy there that had tremendous eyesight at night, and this guy more or less directed his fire. He was a young Marine PFC. And they were also there when the machine gun barrel got too hot. After they fired 100 rounds in 5-round bursts, they would take over then and start the automatic fire from the M14.
Going along on this same style of fighting, Sergeant Gage, do you feel that you're in aviation that you are being taught or were taught before enough infantry to be effective in case this happened to you?
Well, I was taught the same way. Every Marine is a basic infantryman, no matter what other MOS he picks up. And we are assured of the same training that they have. Although they get their infantry MOS, we are first trained as infantry, and then we pick up our military occupational specialty.
But I'm going back to, for example, your training you had in your squadron, your basic training here at, where were you stationed, at El Toro before?
Yes, I was.
Did you learn things in your basic training? Do you feel that this was educational to you?
For this type of warfare, yes. In our basic training, we learn nothing technical about our work. It is all infantry. This is stressed 4 times monthly, usually on a Wednesday or a Friday.
But do you feel that after being over there and seeing what happened, that basic training should be important to your aviation squadrons?
Stressed even more heavily than it is, I do believe so.
You realize this more than before?
Yes, you would. Naturally, having ever been in combat, you would realize the importance of infantry training.
Do you feel there's anything they might have missed in your training that...
Not specifically, other than... More of it is about the only thing they wouldn't... The Marine Corps doesn't miss much when it comes to something like that. They pretty well train you for what you have to face.
Well, using this as an example, do you feel that you could go out and operate a machine gun? Or were you taught when you got over there if it was necessary?
Well, we were taught here how to operate machine guns, the basic ways to, if they malfunctioned, how to clear them. We had classes on the M60. We were well acquainted with most of the weapons that an infantry platoon would use.
Now, who stood your perimeter of defense? The same men that work on your aircraft, people like yourself, in your immediate area?
No, sir. It was 2 companies of 9th Marine Infantry Regiment. They stood our immediate area, the watch around our immediate sector. Now, in other places, there would be different battalions and companies, but it was usually from the infantry end of it that stood the actual watch and the patrols out along the river and around the perimeter.
In other words, Sergeant Gage, people that worked on the aircraft, did they stand guard duty also?
Very much so. In fact, we had our own defense platoon for our immediate sector. This is inside the wire next to our living quarters. Now, they were expected to do their work, their normal working hours, which is usually 12 hours, although some people did work longer. And when they got off work, they were responsible for standing this guard duty. Now, sometimes it wasn't much because of the intelligence that came in. We weren't due to be hit. But if intelligence did come in, a report that we might be hit that night by the Viet Cong, then everybody was in the trenches with their ammunition, their rifles, and equipment.
How was the morale of your troopers in your outfit?
Well, 513 is supposedly the lowest morale outfit in the Marine Corps, but there is not a man in the outfit that won't, you can ask, and he'll tell you truthfully that it is the best. They're proud of the outfit. I don't know whether morale was really high or low, because Marines, I've never seen them act before in combat, and this is my single experience. But I can say this, if I did have to go back in combat today, I would rather it would be with the men I was with this time than rather choose a new outfit.
How did you feel as only being a sergeant and enlisted man, the team effort was over there with the other branches of service?
You mean inter-service wise, such
right.
as Air Force?
Working together and getting along together.
Well, the Marine Corps is basically a lone outfit. I mean, they try, they cooperate with the rest of the services, but the Marine Corps has a reputation for getting things done, and they don't necessarily like to have to depend on too heavily on other units. Now, for instance, if a Marine battalion is pinned down and they need air support, Marines are going to give it to them, if they possibly can. If there's any way possible, it'll be Marines first, and then they'll rely on the Air Force and the Navy second.
Did you ever get a chance to talk to any infantry people in regards to the air support of how they felt about the aviation field?
Well, I talked to several people from 3rd Force Service Regiment. They had the engineer battalions there, and to several people from the infantry regiments that were there, and they said that F-4B Phantom, bar none, was the helped in the field in an actual attack more than any airplane they had ever seen, because the Viet Cong were tremendously afraid when they heard this thing coming. It was like a shock to them. It makes a tremendous amount of noise in a dive, and this seemed to terrorize the Viet Cong, and they were always glad to see these aircraft show up.
Sergeant Gage, what do you feel about your own individual role in the Vietnam War as far as what you did going back and whether we're accomplishing what we're trying to do over there?
Well, I don't really know if we are accomplishing what we are trying to do. We're certainly spending a lot of money, and we're certainly putting in a lot of long hours. If anything can be done, and if the military tacticians believe that this is the thing that should be done, then certainly it couldn't be done better. Now, as far as my personal role in Vietnam, I did what I was told, and that's about the extent of it. You're more or less in a state of shock over there. You're numb. You're usually tired. And you complain quite a bit about the conditions, but after you get out, you look back and you realize that other people went through the same thing and it really wasn't so terrible.
When you came back from Vietnam, did you go back home on leave?
I did.
Do you feel that, as you said before, this is your first time in a combat area, do you feel that you appreciate more things than you did before?
Well, it's kind of hard to get rid of 22 years of life like that. I've always taken freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and that for granted. And as long as I'm an American, I guess I always will. Because there will be people continually from America fighting for this. And as long as that happens, I believe that America, under God, is invincible in a place such as this. I mean, now, no doubt, somewhere somebody could probably beat us in war. But when they do beat us in war, they'll know they've been in a fight.
Now, you were over there when all this anti-Vietnam demonstration were going on back here. What was your feeling and the people you worked with feeling on this particular subject?
You mean like the draft card burners and things of this sort?
Yes, saying that we shouldn't be in Vietnam and all this.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with them. But however, I do believe that if they pay their taxes and are otherwise good citizens, they certainly have a right to express an opinion. Now, if this is not the majority opinion, it shouldn't necessarily hamper in any way we are carrying out our obligation to Vietnam, and also it should not reflect in the actions of the nation or in the way the president makes his decision or in the laws that Congress passed. Because, as I say, most polls seem to think that this is a very small minority of the people, and as long as it stays like that, they can do us no harm. Now, as far as outright violation of the draft law, this is a crime, and Americans are taught when they do something wrong, when they break the law, they have to suffer the consequences. And I believe that if a person burns his draft card and it's against the law, he should be punished accordingly. However, I believe if a person has a lawful demonstration and says that he does not agree with the policy in Vietnam, as long as he leaves it to that and use purely an orderly speech, an orderly manner of conveying his idea to the public, then there is nothing should be done about him. However, no one, not usually, people do agree with what I have said here. They are very much against these demonstrations, and most of the people feel that if the college kids believe we should get out of Vietnam, that they should come over there and see for themselves how the people are living in squalor before they make their hasty decisions.
Well, now, you probably talked it over with the other troops in your squadron. Was this quite a discussion over there in this?
Very much so. Everybody talked about it, and it's to a person in combat, it's very demoralizing to think the people of the United States are against him rather than for what he is doing. Now,
do they realize that this is a minority, though?
Oh, sooner or later. I mean, at first, when it first came out, nobody told them anything. Most of the newspapers we read said that it was a minority, and after we'd read them long enough and heard newscasts long enough, we began to believe them.
What's your own personal feeling about going back to Vietnam?
You mean, would I like to?
Well, yes. Would you like to if your turn came, or would you volunteer? How was your feeling on this?
No, I don't think I would go so far as to volunteer. Now, this is not necessarily because that my views conflict with the views of the nation. I don't necessarily want to go out and burn my ID card, but I've been in the Marine Corps almost 6 years. This in itself, I think I've done my share for my country in relation to, in the first place, they only required 4 years service, but I volunteered for 2 years extra, active duty. This will give me a total obligated service time of almost 6 years, and I believe that I have now served my country in full. Unless, of course, of a national emergency, and then I wouldn't hesitate to reenlist.
Did you have a chance at all to get out and talk to the Vietnamese people? I don't mean verbally because of there is a language barrier, but did you have a chance to get their feelings to see if they're behind us in this particular thing we're trying to do in Vietnam?
It's about a 50-50 proposition. You take any people that are living in squalor, and anyone that offers them a verbal utopia, such as the Viet Cong, they say that they can work wonders if only the people will listen to them and become communist orientated. In other words, pick up the communist doctrine that there will be more rice, more food. And when a man is hungry, that's the first thing he's going to think of. However, the U.S. is making great strides in the fact that they are more or less practicing what they preach, for the Viet Cong are not. Some places the Viet Cong are making headway, but in more places than not, they aren't. They're going back because of their terrorist campaign. In other words, it's like the old saying, you can fool some of the people all the time and all of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time, and the Viet Cong are finding this out.
Well, Sergeant Gage, I want to thank you very much for talking to me today, and I certainly want to wish you a lot of luck.
Thank you.